Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. July 15th, 2020. My thoughts on Twitter July 15th, 2020. It is best for us to agree and accept the words of the Kabbalists that heart ever, the nature, has the same numerical value, in Hebrew, as Elohim, God 86. Then, I will be able to call the laws of God nature's mitzvot commandments, or vice versa, the mitzvot of Elohim by the name nature's laws, for they are one and the same. Baal HaSulam, the peace. If COVID-19 is with us for good, then we must examine it as a natural phenomenon that we can escape by changing our mindset, intention. This virus wishes to teach us to think globally and well about all of Earth's citizens, and to act accordingly. It will re-educate us. Medium published my new article How Virtual Connection Shapes Our World and Ourselves. There is life before and after the appearance of the global coronavirus pandemic. Our physical world has increasingly transformed into a virtual environment, pointing to what the future holds in store for us. Work, friends, studies, community life, everything is taking on a virtual dimension. How will this affect our interpersonal relations, emotions, and performance? It can affect our lives positively if we use the new technological reality to deepen and enhance our human connection. The depth of the feeling and intensity of the new virtual connections will nurture the development of new dimensions in our emotions also. America has become a working from home economy with around 42% of the US labor force is now working full time remotely as a consequence of the social distancing measures, according to a recent study by Stanford University. The remaining workforce are either essential service employees working on their premises or people who have been laid off due to COVID-19's economic meltdown. The shockwaves unleashed by the pandemic continue to hammer the entire world and will change our mindsets forever. The lifestyle we were used to has come to a standstill and staring at our screens now substitutes face-to-face contact. Without our current communication technology, the world would have been thrown into a disruptive global period of isolation. As we deepen our exploration of virtual communication, we will discover that the new virtual reality is much more practical and economical than the old. Employers can drastically reduce costs while employees can become more efficient and productive. During one day, a person is able to virtually meet many more people from far-flung locations, hold meetings, brainstorm, share documents, and execute many other important tasks. The virtual workspace saves travel in traffic jams, nerves and accidents, in addition to the environmental benefits of reduced fuel emissions. But let's think for a moment, isn't there something missing from a virtual engagement compared to a physical encounter? Through the screen we cannot smell the perfume of the person in front of us or be impressed by luxurious items worn by the person, for example. All of the external trappings become superfluous, irrelevant to our contact. In this new virtual world, we will develop an inner vision and an inner feeling of others. We will ascend to a higher dimension of life where we will detach ourselves from the physical form of people and connect to their inner essence. The depth of the feeling and intensity of the new virtual connections will nurture the development of new dimensions in our emotions also. Those already experienced in virtual communication know that sometimes it is precisely in this new kind of connection that one is able to actually express deeper emotion than with physical contact, because in a virtual connection people feel safer and can therefore express themselves more freely. In addition, the very knowledge that we are communicating remotely for a limited time can increase the commitment that both parties feel to the meeting, as well as the desire to invest more in it. Many additional activities can also be carried out in a virtual community life, gatherings, classes, games, and more. With an open mind, one can discover within the virtual dimension new opportunities that do not exist in physical engagements. Although we are in a transition period and concerns naturally arise, over time we will get used to the virtual connection and will not feel that something is missing in it. Virtual connections will gradually spread in all directions. Virtual learning, virtual physical activity and more will be done through the computer, and we will feel that we are truly immersed in shared experiences. Over time, virtual connections will also change us significantly. Gradually, our focus will be focused more and more on the thoughts raised by the person in front of us, on his ideas, desires, plans, and less on his external appearance. As the relationship with the person deepens, his inner image will be revealed in us, and even if we meet physically and discover that he looks different from what we expected, it will not change our impression of him, since we had already connected to his inner richness, his special qualities. In this new virtual world, we will develop an inner vision and an inner feeling of others. We will ascend to a higher dimension of life where we will detach ourselves from the physical form of people and connect to their inner essence. Such a level of connection will fill all the voids and lacks missing from our social life, and the world we experience will simply feel much better. We will sense the inner essence of each and every person and communicate with each other in heart and soul. Every individual in society will feel that he can connect with others in the most internal possible connection, and this will give us a feeling of unlimited bonding by which we will be able to break all the boundaries of perception. In this way, we will break away from all the restrictions we feel today and reach the highest possible state. We will finally use virtual connection not as the end goal, but as the gateway to transcend to the more meaningful human relations of love and unity. Medium published my new article, 5 Things We Need to Know in the Days of COVID-19. Nobody understands it. No one really knows where it came from, how it was made, what is its purpose, how it affects us, why it affects us the way that it does, or how to get rid of it, if there's even a way. COVID-19 has us cornered, at its mercy, and we're just waiting for the bell to save us. The final result of the novel coronavirus pandemic will be a society whose people receive their basic needs effortlessly, socialize with one another throughout their day, and live in peace with each other and with nature. But in truth, we have a bigger problem than answering these just mentioned questions. Our problem is our attitude to the virus, because if we change our attitude, we will turn the menace into a blessing. Below are 5 things we need to know in order to change our attitude and turn the bane into a boon. 1. The first thing we need to know is that the virus influences more than our bodies. Besides its obvious physical impacts, it is affecting us emotionally and mentally. The virus is changing our psychology. It has forced us into a lockdown and made us re-examine many values that we took for granted. It showed us that it's okay not to buy or look for shopping opportunities every single moment. It opened our eyes to the people around us, our parents, children, spouses, and friends. It showed us how impatient we are, how caring we are or are not, and how caring or not are our kin. 2. COVID-19 is a teacher of mutual responsibility. Even if I don't feel sick, and I am young and strong and healthy, I could be a carrier and transmit the virus to my not so young, strong, and healthy parents or grandparents. Therefore, I must avoid hugging them and kissing them, or sending the kids to be with them when I want to get some work done. And I must do that not because I don't want to catch the virus, but in order not to transmit it to them. Moreover, the authorities tell me that I must apply this approach when I go outside in order not to transmit the virus to others, to complete strangers. This is a completely novel social approach, yet fit tell in these days of super contagious bugs. 3. Another very important thing to know is that the virus is restructuring the economy. Like it or not, it is killing consumerism, vanquishing capitalism, and introducing what NY Times columnist Thomas Friedan called jobs that create more value with hearts and between hearts. This is not 20th century communism or socialism. It is not an economy that sees everyone as the same. On the contrary, it sees everyone as unique and strives to benefit from everyone's unique skills and capabilities. Accordingly, it supports the development of each person's flares and talents, which one then happily employs to improve society as a whole, while society recognizes each person's contribution and commends each person for his or her efforts to make the society a better place to live in. In this way, society both benefits from people's contributions, and people happily contribute because it empowers them, fulfills their dreams, and makes them feel worthy and valuable as human beings. 4. The coronavirus will drive us to perform radical changes in the job market. On the material level, society will see to people's staples. They won't need to worry about getting food, water, shelter, healthcare, education, and even recreation. There will be people whose contribution to society will be manufacturing and provision of staples to all. The rest of the people will not sit idle. They will be busy creating value with their hearts, as a Friedman put it, enhancing social solidarity and cohesion. 5. The final result of the novel coronavirus pandemic will be a society whose people receive their basic needs effortlessly, socialize with one another throughout their day, and live in peace with each other and with nature. Since excessive shopping will not please people anymore, they won't consume more than they need and will not deplete the planet from its resources. Nature will recover, the climate will return to balance, and people will feel united among themselves and with the whole of nature. How to live after the quarantine? Question: how does one live after the quarantine? I became afraid to go outside and look at people. And they also look at me somewhat with suspicion. Answer: I do not see that. At least around me, here. Here, on the contrary, cars are driving again, and people again are scurrying around the streets. However, you can see that they have changed. They are somehow a little bit distanced from each other, they do not jump directly at you, as before. Perhaps in this way, a person will gradually understand how to relate to others attentively. Although now we behave this way because of the virus, fearing to get infected from someone, but gradually from this state we can come to another one, mutual respect, sympathy, support, and attention. I like these changes in the world. And we did not pay much for them. When we return to normal life, we will see that we got rid of many completely unnecessary activities and conventions. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, May 17, 2020. Viruses are queuing up. Question: how do you see the immediate future of the world, for example, this autumn? Answer: I don't think the virus will be gone. It will mutate and change. Nature will start pestering us and forcing us to reflect upon what we should be like in order not to get sick and not to experience these blows. I hope we will learn from nature correctly and behave accordingly. And the fact that we are now counting how many people have become ill does not matter at all. We must clearly feel that all our problems come only from the wrong mutual relations between us. Therefore, it does not matter if it is summer or fall. Of course, seasons are important but not essential. All these viruses are standing in line in huge numbers to appear in us. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, May 17, 2020. Giving life to the common soul. Question: how are the particular and the general connected? If some kind of bacteria that produces oxygen molecules without knowing it has affected our lives so much, then how can each of us affect all of nature? Answer: I cannot say anything about oxygen molecules. I only know that absolutely all of nature comes from one source and continues its development. Therefore, whatever new forms appear in nature, they are manifested in the fullest mutual connection with each other. Although we do not feel this and cannot yet discover and investigate, all of nature is absolutely integral, and there is not a single part of it that suddenly begins to develop by itself. Question: thanks to some bacteria that lived for, say, 2 weeks and produced oxygen, thousands of people live today. Is it possible to assume that the meaning of existence of each of us is to give life to some super being? Or is everyone's life important? Answer: the life of each of us is important because we are parts of this super being, which is called the soul. It is one for all of us. From CAB TV's The Post-Coronavirus Era, April 30, 2020. The inner meaning of the crisis. Question: what are the negative and positive during a crisis, the crisis itself, or our reaction to it? Answer: in a crisis, the most important thing is to understand it and react correctly so that it lifts us up. As I have said many times, crisis, mashbeah, in Hebrew means birth, the place where a new person is born. In fact, the inner meaning of crisis is the birth of something new. Only we don't feel it, we don't understand it yet. But I'm sure we will. We will see how a new, integrally connected humanity is being born before our eyes that has greater understanding that it must live according to other laws and not as before. Question: after the crisis, will we move to a new spiritual level? Answer: we have reached this stage, but we have not yet passed it. We have several stages ahead of us. But this new, serious stage that we are currently going through should teach us a lot. Question: if the crisis is the birth of something new, does it mean that people who died from the coronavirus simply could not live in the new conditions, in harmony with nature? But everything is in the power of the Creator. Answer: as for the dead, unborn, and those who will be born, we will talk separately. This is a whole system that we will need to master and see where free will is, why such and such souls are born, what is done with them, etc. We must study this in a common global system. From CAB TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, May 10, 2020. Attain paradise while living in this world. Question: the pleasure of connection does not seem very tempting to us. Why? According to the pyramid of desires, it should be the opposite. When you say that everyone will sit in circles and socialize, it sounds like a joke. For example, in anecdotes about heaven and hell, it is said that in hell it is good, life is raging there, and in paradise everything is so pastoral, phlegmatic, calm, bliss, spiritual. Why is this so? Answer: this is not our idea of heaven and hell. From the point of view of Kabbalah, paradise is the universal connection of mankind and its attainment of the great, unified force of nature, called Shekhinah. That is what it says: the righteous sit, that is, they are in a state of katnut, smallness, and, being united, enjoyed the Shekhinah, the radiance of unity, perfection, universality of nature. This is the highest measure of pleasure that creation can experience. I do not try to lure anyone to me. Let people live and enjoy what they have. But I want to at least express the true point of view that a person can understand while still living in this world. It is within his power. And I offer it to him. Question: is this specially made so by nature that people are not lured by such offers? Answer: sure. So that we consciously come to this, ask, demand, and invest in revealing the truth. From CAB TV's The Post-Coronavirus Era, April 23, 2020. Opposition to Unity, Part 3. Question: what is exile? What is this relationship between people? Answer: in Kabbalah, the term exile refers to exile from the property of bestowal and love, from connection between each other. If a group that is in some kind of a relationship suddenly begins to feel that it is seized by egoistic desires and people are internally estranging from each other, This means that they are ruled by Pharaoh, their egoism. This condition is called expulsion from spirituality. This is not a physical, but a sensory feeling. Comment: even from history it is known that during those periods people were practically not exiled physically, and during what are called the Babylonian, Assyrian exile, people remained in place, and only the ruling elite was exiled. From CabTV's systematic analysis of the development of the people of Israel, July 29, 2019. New Life 1242. The ecological effects of the coronavirus.
Shalom lachem, toda shetem
itzim. Hello, and thanks for being with us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. And today we'd like to talk about the ecologic effect of the coronavirus, of the corona period. I guess you also saw many videos about how when we were confined to our homes, where we were, when we were in quarantine, as if nature came to life. We're all sitting at home, no one on the streets, no one in the parks, and animals, they got time to go out, walk in our parks, have a good time. We saw a very strong and quick influence on how the pollution decreased, the water became clear, meaning on all levels of nature, still, vegetative, animate, we saw some kind of relief. We saw some kind of renewal. And from here comes a question: what conclusions do you think that we, as a mankind, should deduce from this? What do we have to learn, derive from this? That man is the only harming creature in nature, and that we have to get rid of people. Nature wants for people to cease to exist. Yeah? The way we see things now, nature is entirely against us. Then why did nature create people? First of all, he didn't create them the way we are. That's one thing. Another thing is that we have to understand that the form that we have now isn't the form in which nature has created us. We lived in nature, and we've developed from a good and nice form where we didn't harm nature, we were very close to animals. And then gradually, slowly, the ego grew, and it is a harmful additional force that does not exist in the nature of the still, the vegetative, and the animate. And even though that this ego is what disconnected us from the still, the vegetative, and the animate, and we kind of became beings in and of ourselves, human beings, but still, this is a state in which we see what a harmful factor we became towards ourselves and also toward the still, the vegetative, and the animate. And the still, the vegetative, and the animate, without us, they use each other anyway, but they're balanced. And this, too, is a part of the eco-balance that exists between them, the way that they use each other or destroy one another, but usually they destroy what has to be destroyed anyhow, with wolves and things, anything that is being eradicated from nature by a different species, is because its time has passed. It has to leave. And therefore, this is how it is. This also how it was with dinosaurs, with all the things that disappeared and are also disappearing now. We do, and to the contrary, If we do not allow nature to destroy something, then by that we cause disbalance and harmful things happen, like it was with birds in China and other things. And also, we did the same with wolves in northern Russia. That the deer couldn't exist either because wolves didn't eat the ill deer, and therefore the ill deer, the sick deer, multiplied and everyone became affected. So nature's in balance, and it's not that we have to look at things through our egoistic eyes, look at the balance through our egoistic eyes, but we have to make room for nature. And therefore, now, in the time of the corona, we've also seen beautiful things happening that suddenly, who thought that here, right next to us, there are wolves? And suddenly, a fellow, I know him, he's a photographer, and he simply shoots them, meaning he photographs them. A group of wolves, a pack of wolves, simply wandering in the park. You saw the photos? Yeah, I did. And there are other such examples. When I opened my window, I saw that birds stopped being afraid. Suddenly, they're landing next to me, singing. You know, it's beautiful. The air became fresher. The water became fresher. Come on. All in all, we've been quarantined for just a bit. We're confined from nature. Without us, were humanity to disappear off the face of the face of the earth, it would have been heaven. For whom? I don't know. But the vegetative and the animate, they would have enjoyed each other perfectly, really. So, from here comes my next question. Are we supposed to learn from this that man has to decrease his participation in the system of nature? Not only to decrease, but man has to correctly position himself in relation to the system of nature, because to simply decrease, that won't help. It's like the wise Alex will decrease the emission of poisonous gases into the atmosphere. Well, we see that nothing comes as a result. We, the way in which we are right now, we have to disappear off the face of the earth. We have to correct ourselves and to be in balance with the still, the vegetative, and the animate. Did the factor that made man corrupt or decrease other creatures in nature is human invasion into areas that they didn't live in before, meaning in the past we weren't that many. Now we're billions, so we've invaded places where previously people didn't live before. Is this what brought upon us a negative feedback from nature? Of course, if we invade an area that is not ours, then according to the will to receive of each and every created being, they want to push us back. It's natural. Does it mean that nature should decrease the population of the earth for there to be less people? No, it all depends on the way we behave toward nature. We can actually add to nature. To add, first, there are several things here. First of all, not to cause harm, that's for sure, as if we do not exist. And if still it would be possible to add something, then we add something good. Previously, you said something that really shocked me. You said that nature wants to destroy us. in the way in which we are today, that we want to harm. Let's try and isolate this component. How exactly are we harmful? We have a very egoistic, bad, evil desire where we take no one into consideration. Before I go into life, and I see that in the world that I live in, there's also still the vegetative and the animate, besides human beings. So I have to see how do I integrate with them, with all of them, including people, in a good and nice way. So first of all, they won't see me as a harmful part. Harmful meaning what? What is that thing that we have to neutralize? That I'm thinking to my own benefit? As simple as that. Wherever I think to my own benefit, that's called harmful, even in thought. Any creature in nature, as much as I understand, think to their benefit, otherwise they couldn't exist. To their benefit, but not at the expense of others, because if it is at the expense of others, eventually it's not to their benefit. What do you mean by at the expense of others? There's a wolf that eats a sheep for the sake of the integral nature. Again, it means that I enter nature not in order to harm, not with the thought that I'm going to harm, that I'm going to use nature only to the measure to which I need to in order to provide, in order to feed myself. And by no means, not in any other way in which I harm nature. So, wait, there's another component here. I'm taking from nature whatever I need in order to exist, like a sheep that's going to eat, like a wolf that's going to eat a sheep. Yes, but by this, I don't mean to cause harm to anything, to no one, but only to use the natural resources to fulfill my basic needs. So, if I take what I need from nature, like a wolf that wants to have lunch, and therefore he takes a sheep, and he'll take the weaker sheep, and by that, he actually increases the general health of the sheep, if he takes only what he needs, everything's fine. By that, he carries out a special role in nature, that he is benefiting all of nature by taking the sick sheep. Okay, now, suppose comes man and takes water, takes air, takes soil, takes animals, takes the vegetative, takes from everything that's around him in order to live, to exist. He examines that this is exactly what he needs in order to meet his basic needs. Does a wolf calculate, do this examination? Yes, he naturally does. He doesn't eat more than he needs, and no more than one sheep. And if he's satiated, he doesn't need those sheep. And how does the system synchronize so that all sheep will work this way? Nature forces us to act that way. Okay. Now, human beings, we're not living in ancient times where I'd used to hunt a mammoth for dinner. Well, a mammoth would be enough for half a year. Well, you know, I'm not proficient in hunting mammoths, but it's not ancient times where we hunt. I go to the supermarket. I have to take off the shelf what I need. What I need. What I need, and as much as I need. And here we are facing a problem. And we have a big problem with nature, because we're destroying nature in order to create 1,000 different products, 1,000 different kinds of cheese, 1,000 different kinds of whatever. Do you see this? It is exploiting nature in a bad way. But why? Because it's like a wolf that eats 10 sheep, even though that he needs just one and a sick one. But I won't eat a kilogram of cheese. I'll come and take the cheese that I like, and you'll come and you'll take the cheese you like. We're throwing away more than half of what we produce. Okay, I understand that a person goes to the supermarket, codename supermarket, and takes more than he needs, even if he has the money to pay. And all in all people behave this way. We buy more, produce more, throw away more. All in all, by this, we steal from nature more than we need. Yeah? But how can I take that into account? I come to the supermarket and I take what I need. So you need education. That will give me what? That will teach you how to be balanced with nature. In nature, a wolf does it naturally. You can't. You have the evil inclination. You really want to swallow the entire supermarket. Maybe, but at the end of the day, I'll come out with the cheese that I like, not with all cheeses. Well, it all depends on education and basic needs. I don't understand the problem. The problem is that we do not want to be balanced with nature like animals. And according to our physiological life, we're animals. We're animals and we have to live that way. And this is the healthiest thing for our body, for nature, and that's it. But we're not animals. We're more developed than animals. It's a problem. The excessive is at the expense of our ego. It comes from our ego. This I don't get. A man's brain is much more developed than a wolf's brain, I think. So we developed 1,000 kinds of cheese. It's wonderful. It's like art, creating. We took natural resources and we were able to make plenty of wonderful things. You like spicy. I like salty. What's the problem? The problem is that there's nothing good about it. By that, all in all, you are engaged in things that are unrelated to your correction in the world, to your role in the world. Am I corrupting in some way? Of course you are. You are corrupting, you're destroying the world by creating 1,000 different sorts and kinds excessively. By this, wanting to be better than the other cheese manufacturers, and you have such wars and calculations that no one actually gains from. Now you're talking about relations between people. It's not only that I make 1,000 different kinds of cheese, but I will also be happy that your factory that makes 1,000 different kinds of cheese will go bankrupt. Of course. How does that influence everything? Because were we to relate to nature integrally, then no one would destroy the others. And also in nature, we would have seen that... Well, let's leave that. It doesn't want to eat anyone. It would have been projected from man onto nature as a whole. The destructive competition between people affects the other species in nature. Of course, how does this work? We're animals. According to our body, we're animals. And if we take for our body more than an animal needs, more than wolves take instinctively, for example, then in this surplus where we take more than an animal in our physiological life, by that we influence all of nature destructively. Because we are bring in our ego on this, which is higher than the animate level of the entire nature. The human ego, what is it exactly? If I understand what you're saying, this is what destroys the system in general. What exactly is the human ego? To be well off at the expense of others, like that cheese factory owner that wants for the competitor to go bankrupt, yeah, to succeed at his expense, yeah. So there are two different levels here where we're erring. The one is that I'm building my own success on the ruins of others. The other level is that in general I'm taking from nature more than I need. Yeah. Are these two levels related and are connected? It all stems from my excessive will to receive that is beyond the animate level, wanting everything. Everything to what extent? Completely everything. It reminds me of obesity. In the United States, it's a national disease. So this motive of exaggerating, which causes us to be sick, probably causes a much deeper illness in the relationships between people, between man and nature. Is there a general disease of exaggeration here? Of course. In our ordinary life, we have to be like animals. Like animals. Meaning to try and feel how what's good for me, and that's it. But we're not animals. Once I saw such a person. Once. It really intrigued me. I was in the city. And I had a meeting with a friend of mine from the past. And we met, it was abroad. So he told me, you know what, I'm so hungry. Let's go eat in some restaurant. We went to a restaurant. You know, more of a coffee shop. And he took something, I took something. I remember that I was amazed. He was so hungry. He ate third of his portion. I, who was not hungry, finished my entire portion. And I was looking and thinking, what's going on? It's a matter of habit, culture, consumption. It's something that exists in one, but doesn't exist in the other. I wasn't hungry at all. But if it's already in front of me and I paid for it, how not? It's mine. And he, who was so hungry, he ate a third of what he had in his dish. And he said, no, I don't want any more. What do you mean? Finish it. You know, like we tell our children, you have to finish. So, the modern disease of man is exaggeration. Our entire culture is that way. All of it. Swallow everything. Be the biggest, best, fattest, so what? Strongest. To specify and understand a bit more deeply, exaggeration in terms of relationships between people. Destructive competition. If I make something and you make something, I wish for you to fail because then I'll succeed. In your eyes, I'm a sheep and you are the wolf. That's it. But that's natural. I want to understand, where does the exaggeration begin? If we think about competition, competition is actually what develops us. We know that if you look at someone else and he's successful, it gives you a drive to invest, to succeed, to develop. If we extract competition from humanity, there will be no development. So, why are you bowing so strongly to your god of development? Who and what is he? Development, development. We have to go out. We have to conquer. Enjoy. Go to Mars. Space. Things. What do you have as a result? Besides that, besides your ego, that you want to show everyone that I'm king of the world. I'm in control. What do you have as a result? Or someone that came to this, do they feel themselves happy? By that, did a person on the way did not cause our planet and other people different forms of suffering? Does he not endanger all of us, himself, the entire planet, who knows in what way? Look what we came to. What do we need? A-bombs for, H-bombs from, arms race for, the oceans that are overpolluted with garbage. Look what's going on. During the coronavirus, we didn't go to work for 2 months. And look at the relief. How healthy we've become. And the air, the ozone, the water. So what's our problem? Why do you need 1,000 different kinds of cheese? And if in 10 years you'll have 2,000 kinds of cheese, will you be happier? This is how you measure your happiness. Let's measure man's happiness. It depends on man's education, of course, but if for me it's enough to eat like that friend of mine that ate a third of what's in his dish and I ate everything and he enjoyed it and he really covered his appetite, his hunger, and for me I just got fatter. We have to change ourselves and reach a state where we are a part of integral society. And that here we really have to change ourselves for us to relatively live correctly in nature, with nature, integrally connected with everything. So we'll also go to our parks, why not? As it says, and the wolf shall dwell with the lamb. This is a very comprehensive approach, depending only on human beings. I'd love to talk about this some more. If you can summarize, what's the central thing a person should learn about his system of relations with nature? That his entire well-being and future depends on his balance with nature. Thank you very much, Dr. Leitman. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.